Hey, what's up, guys? We got a great Fraudcast for you this week. We brought Patrick Schumacher from Surviving Jack, formerly of Surviving Jack. He's going to tell us all about that, getting canceled, and his nightmare wedding story this week. And then we got OJ Patterson and Matt Lieb, a couple, you know, awesome San Francisco comedians. And they're going to hang out and talk about True Romance. So enjoy. Hey, what's going on? It's the Film Drunk Fraudcast back in your ear holes, live from the Fraud Quarters in San Francisco. We got the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb, sitting to my right.
Hey, how are you doing? I got it queued up on my phone now, so you don't have to ever mess with the soundboard.
That's right. And, you know, Brendan, he canceled on me at the last minute again.
Yeah,
I got a lot of them.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. But you know that's okay because we replaced him with Mr. OJ Patterson.
I knew something was up. I know you don't get a phone call at 6 p.m.
Yeah, we need you.
Oh no, to be fair, I did invite you on before I knew Brendan had canceled, so you were the guest either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We swear to God. Swear to God.
My ego has been properly stroked.
Good.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I remember we sat in the same press round. In addition to knowing each other through comedy,
yeah,
I think we sat in the same round table at the Tim and Eric. Was it Tim and Eric or was it something else?
It was Tim and Eric, and they were producing billion dollar movie.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Which yeah. I liked quite a bit.
I enjoyed because it was so... It didn't need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it existed, especially in the climate that like there's all these comedy blockbusters or misses.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they had that as a, like a concept. Like we're just going to get a lot of like look-alike actors and we're going to get our famous friends and we're just going to hang out in a mall yeah. and we're going to film a movie.
Dude, everything that John C. Reilly did, I thought was like the taquito rap in that was so amazing. I wish I had a sound clip of that.
I just like the idea that like an urban wolf. Just the idea of an urban wolf.
Yeah. I think I wrote a story about that in college. Just because I liked the idea of
like a magical realism type thing?
Yeah, just I liked the idea of packs of wolves going through. I liked the idea of wolves invading office buildings. Like, like packs of wolves on elevators yes. sort of thing.
Tearing people to bits.
Yeah, it's like ding! And then it's like Free Bagel Wednesday and then suddenly just everybody's just getting torn apart by wolves. Obviously, I had a desk job that I didn't like very much.
Yeah, yeah, you were channeling some real resentment there.
Some dark stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's real life.
Yeah, well, tell us about your background. I don't know. I know you, but I don't know you. You know,
such a fucking lie. Like everything that I look at my life is just like, what are you fucking doing? I am currently on a hiatus comedian because I got a fucking real job.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel like a comedian, but I do podcasting and blogging. And
what is your What are you on hiatus for? I mean, what are you on hiatus in favor? Like, what's your real job that you caused you to?
My real job is like customer service and tech. Okay. Yeah. Just some real like. Save up to start a family bullshit
yeah.
kind of job.
Yeah, it makes
You're
sense.
Way too young for that.
I know. That's why.
Getting it out of the way now.
Getting it out of the way now.
Just like save up that money and start that family. And then abandon them for your dreams.
Yeah.
I got this Russian mail order bride I had my eye on.
Yeah.
To save up for. She's great.
It's funny thing is, not even Russian.
Yeah. Right, that's the thing. She's a knockoff. She's yeah. like a Ukrainian.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like an AK-47 that jams all
right,
the time.
Right, exactly.
She's like, I got it, but it doesn't do anything.
Right, it's not as good as the original.
But no, I do comedy. It's weird. How do you guys feel about you doing stand-up and like how many times you go up a week? Because I feel like I've been slacking.
Well, I haven't been up in like 2 or 3 weeks now. Yeah. And I always feel like the thing that I hate about comedy is Like I'll go down to LA and like do a sold out show at the Improv and just crush.
Yeah.
And then I come back and I'm still fucking elbowing people out of the way, trying to sign up for an open mic at a goddamn laundromat. Like 2 days later, you're like, how long does this go on until I can not have like a terrible? I just wish there was a way to get consistent stage time without that soul crushing feeling of like spending 3 hours at a laundromat.
Or spending all your time on Facebook just hitting up people like, hey, I know you're on a show. Can I please? Will you allow me to spend my money traveling to your show so I can tell some jokes?
I will bring someone else that you actually want on the show.
Yeah.
I have a car.
I know some people. Got some really good contacts in LA.
Yeah. I always feel guilty when I don't do a show like consistently. That's like so when you're talking about like feeling like you're slacking, like, but I also always feel guilty when I'm on shows and I know there's something else I should be doing.
Like,
so,
like what?
Well, like
because you seem like you have a life of like ultimate freedom.
Yeah,
very fancy free.
I just live freely and I live and I do what I want, you know. That's like kind of true except for the money thing. Like I have all the freedom in the world.
I do what I want as long as it doesn't require any money.
Right, exactly. As long as it doesn't require money and as long as I won't need money to do it. Like I make just enough money to pay rent.
Yeah.
And the food stamps takes care of the rest of everything else.
Speaking of mental health, you had a talk a friend down from a ledge?
Oh, no. Yeah. Well,
recently?
So, yeah. So, oh, man. Yeah. So, for the broadcast listeners who know this story, do you remember the woman who I met after a show who choked me in my mom's minivan and spit in my face? Hi, OJ. That's something that happened to me. Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that or not, but that's something that happened.
This is I always suspect the worst.
Yeah. I have a dark sexual side. She and I keep contact, she was considering taking a bunch of alcohol and Klonopin at the same time, and I was like, that'll kill you, so don't do that.
What does Klonopin do?
Klonopin is like a benzodiazepine. It's like like Xanax or like Valium. If you take a bunch of that and drink, it's bad times.
But what was she drinking? Was it like white wine spritzers or
I'm not sure.
Some apple teenies?
Is that a question you ask right away?
Yeah. Well, knowing her, she, like, it was probably just straight like isopropyl alcohol. Like she is like like she, it was rubbing alcohol. Knowing her, she's got some serious issues.
Rub a dub dub.
And it was funny because like I ended up because she said, which one should I do? Should I take this or should I drink the alcohol or should I take the Klonopin? So I was like, one will invariably lead to the other. Neither is the thing that you should do. What you should do is go somewhere where there's lots of people, and just be there.
Yeah.
And make sure, and then at some point, you know, maybe a guy will start talking to you and, you know, in his quest to hit on you, maybe you'll rethink life. You know, I just like thinking, like the only thing,
sounds like a terrible strategy to not be depressed. Go to a public place where you're all by yourself and hope that someone talks to you.
Well,
I guess that's easier if you're a girl, but still.
I don't know. It felt to me like the safest thing she could do was to not be alone. Okay. And so
go spit on someone.
Yeah, find a stranger, spit in their face, choke them in their mom's minivan. For just added context, it's not like she was trying to kill me. She just really wanted to feel what it was like to choke someone.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'm the real okay.
Yeah. He thought she had nice boobs, so he's like, sure.
Yeah,
he's like, I got a neck.
Mm-hmm. we can get this taken care of right now.
Check that one off.
If your curiosity has peaked, then I will help you out. So, anyways, but she's doing all right now. She's alive. And
what a coincidence. My bucket list involves getting choked and spat on by a busty lady.
Yeah. It's like, this is perfect. Win-win. 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 So she's good now. Everything's fine.
That's good.
But, sometimes that's the thing about...
I guess doing 12-step thingies is that sometimes you have to take calls from people who are, you know,
waiting to take that first step.
Yeah.
I commend you, though, because it's like you're constantly in a very particular friend zone with a lot of people.
Oh,
The worst kind of friend zone.
The worst kind of friend zone where it's just like...
Yeah, right.
You're called to action a lot.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's like I get to...
you're vigilant.
Not have my cake and not eat it either. And
tell other people how to not eat theirs.
Yeah, I just make sure no one has cake at all times.
I'm like the opposite kind of friend where I'm like, if you fall off the wagon and you decide you want to go out for a drink, I'll be there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Just call me when your shit gets fucked up. Yeah. So that I have
something. I'll buy you a shot or two, you know?
Exactly.
We'll race hell and such.
Yeah, you know, there's all types of people in the world, Vince.
Yeah.
Good ones and bad ones.
That's right. It's a rich tapestry. I'm just happy to be
exactly
in that negative space.
Yeah.
So, OJ, you run a comedy Tumblr,
mm-hmm.
right?
Courting Comedy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you start that?
Started that in 2010, June, July, something like that.
It's just like a place where you put all your favorite quotes and what do you mean?
It used to be a place where I like... You could really see the age. Like, I started that blog when I was 21, and now I'm 25. You can just see the, like, passion, like, just dripping from the page. Just, like, it's funny because, I don't know, just writing in general or websites in general is such a specific high where you're just like, oh, people are liking that thing that I wrote. So then you want to write more, but then that takes more time. Cause I'm a very slow writer. So at this point, I'm just like, it's up when it's up.
Right.
Yeah. I'll court it when I court. I'm very old Jewish husband with my blog right now.
Yeah.
You'd think you'd get faster over time, but you get slower because you get more paranoid. Like you realize all the little mistakes you can make, and so you end up rereading your shit more and more, and it's not... I feel like it gets slower.
Yeah, because the more people who are reading it and the more people who are listening to it, like, you want the quality to match, you know, what you think they have in their head, so you get slower. That makes sense.
Plus, I don't know about your social situation, but I'm currently living with my girlfriend.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Over in Oakland, so I'm just... It's a real struggle to do the job of just like not only finding the comedy that I like, which is fucking hard because Bay Area comedians are very bad at promoting themselves, and then I just have to deal with like I'm using her computer. I'm a real scumbag if I'm blogging, so I just try to keep it down to a minimum.
Yeah. I love that blog because. It's great because it keeps a tab on like, oh, this is what some of my friends did this week.
You once wrote like a very impassioned Facebook message. And I was just like, oh, that's like so sweet. Because he was just like, and you don't even go on people's Facebook and be like, look what I wrote about you.
I just like that you were like the opposite of an internet troll. It was like you were...
Right, he's an anonymous cheerleader.
Yeah, really. It was great. Like, because like, I think, the message was like, you don't have to be as nice as you are, but you are anyway. And I wish there were more people like you. Because I feel like the comedy is filled with people who are mean.
I was just like, because I do think, you know.
I don't even want to know how sentimental you got when you were like drinking and doing drugs.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just a puddle of tears.
Yeah, lots of crying. Lots of crying. Lots of like, people, thank you for helping me. And then also a lot of anger. And that's like something that I don't get as much anymore because I don't have like those huge shifts in emotions. Like where all of a sudden I'll just be like, you know, leave me the fuck alone. I'm trying to live my life the way I want to live it. And then oh, I'm sorry. I did this to you.
I just said it because I love you so much.
Exactly. This is a tangent, but I was talking to Chris Riggins, who's a comedian in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and he was talking about Tupac. And
and I feel like I identified with Tupac a little bit in one sense, which is really weird for me to say.
Yeah.
But because Tupac had some real emotional issues. I think, I don't know if it was all surrounding like drinking and drugs.
What's,
but
what's the astrological sign with the two people?
Oh, Sagittarius.
Gemini.
Yeah. He was. Many people think that Tupac
was a Gemini.
Well, he. They think he might. It's a theory out there.
Right.
But no, he had two sides.
Yeah.
A very, very, very distinct two sides.
Yeah. And I think that's true. It could be like he was bipolar or something like that. But Chris Riggins was telling a story about this guy that he knew in Oakland who was telling a story about Tupac where he went over to a producer's house at like 3 a.m.
yeah.
and just started like, we got to record right now.
Yeah.
The guy's like, it's 3 a.m. I'm trying to sleep right now. You know, my wife's in bed, like, go away. And then he just like, he just started beating on him, like, or like started breaking shit in his house and stuff like that. And they called the cops, and then he like Tupac like took off with this guy, and they left. And then he came back like a few hours later, just in tears, just yeah. like, man, I'm so sorry that I did this to you. I don't know what comes over me.
Yeah.
And then like he was creating such a scene,
yeah.
apologizing, that they again almost like called the cops. And they're like, Tupac's freaking out again. And I just really identified with that. I was like, man, I remember doing similar things when I was on drugs where I'd be like, leave me the fuck alone! And then like later, I'd be like, man, I need you to be on my side. And I thank you for doing the things you did. I don't know.
And you had a wrap in on your head.
Yeah, right.
That connected on the front. Yeah.
Tupac's yep. the only person that wore that. No one else wears that now.
Yep, no one at all.
So anyway,
we miss you, Tupac.
I brought OJ on to talk some True Romance. I went to True Romance Fest this week. We also have Patrick Schumacher coming on, Justin Halpern's writing partner. He's coming on in about 7 minutes because he has a really awesome story about a nightmare wedding.
Yeah.
That he is going through. Also, his show just got canceled like 2 hours before
yeah.
this podcast, which I didn't plan for.
Yeah.
Very sad day.
Yeah. Broadcast breaking news right there.
Right.
Surviving Jack is no more.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
But yeah, I wanted Brendan to be here too, because Brendan's getting married in July. And so I thought the story of this ultimate disaster wedding that cost, well, we'll find out how much this cost him. But anyway, so that's going to go on in about 7 minutes. In the meantime, I don't know. I went to True Romance Fest. It was weird.
Yeah. So it's just a festival where they show True Romance?
So it was the first one. So I expected it to be a little thrown together. Not quite. I've never been to, I've been to like a Lebowski party. I've been to like Comic-Con. I've never been to a festival dedicated to one movie.
Yeah.
So I think the idea was that, yeah, they were going to show it and have special guests. But they also did like the VIP package where you actually stay at the Safari Inn. And I had brunch with Bronson Pinchot.
Who's Bronson Pinchot?
He's Balky from Perfect Strangers. He also plays Elliot, the actor in the movie. The guy with the coke on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And
you had lunch with him?
A brunch, yeah.
Ooh, even better.
I know. And it sounded really weird, and it was really weird, but we're in like a crappy hotel auxiliary room, and Bronson shows up. And at first we're like, all right, fucking poor guy. I wonder how much he got paid to just show up
and
be here. And it's gotta be so weird, right?
Yeah.
So then he shows up and he's just like the most comfortable person in the world. Just not a care in the world. He sort of just shows up and like takes over the room and is like, hey everybody, what's going on? And like he's like, look at this guy. Like he has the most I think he gets the award for spent the most time on his hair this morning, and everybody laughs their ass off. And he's like, instead of speaking, I'm just going to go around and sit at everybody's table for a while. And there's like, five
speed
tables.
Speed dated the whole situation.
Pretty much. So he comes and he starts hanging, and he's hanging out with us at our table for a while. And he's just like, he's actually just really good to have there. Like it wasn't that weird at all. Like we'd ask him questions.
What if he was like, a prima donna?
Well, yeah.
Let's just get this over with.
I would have been so awkward, like having lunch with a bunch of strangers, just like Yeah, that wouldn't. That's not my speed.
I like
at
the
all.
Idea of him, like, he just starts eating, and every time someone's like, "Oh, all right," so, and they go, "I'm fucking eating." Yeah. You're like, but you sat at the table.
So he sort of moved away. I forget where he moved to, but he moved away from Hollywood. Sort of just got out of the acting game a few years ago. Yeah. And I think he did that solely so that he could just burn every bridge that he has ever had. Because nice. You ask him any story about anybody, and it's just like, whoop, right under the... Like, there's no...
Nice.
There's no censoring stories he had us about people.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
You should get him on the podcast.
He's actually... Yeah, I know. I want to. He's actually the one a few years ago. He was telling the story about working with Tom Cruise on I forget what movie it was, but he was talking about how Tom Cruise was kind of like, would say like really weird and homophobic things. Like,
really?
We should go over there, you know, as long as there's not any like gays over there.
Because I'm totally not gay.
Yeah.
And as you know, as another straight man, we don't like gays. Yeah. Right? Other straight person.
That's how I talk about things that I want to do, but that my girlfriend doesn't want to do. We could go to Senate Cave. I know it's going to be dumb. It's going to be dumb. Yeah. It's going to be dumb. No one's going to be there that we like. We're just going to watch it. It's comedy.
It's stupid. It's stupid.
Just strip your shirt off. Hey, pass me that popsicle. As long as there's no fags around. Yeah. You know? Am I right, bro?
Yeah.
Fist pound me.
Yeah, sucking dick is dumb, right? I hate
you. Wouldn't catch me dead sucking dick.
No, never.
So they're asking Bronson about Quentin Tarantino, and it's funny because he just sort of like tosses off comments where you're like, wait, did he mean that in a really insulting way? Because you're not used to hearing actors sort of talk shit.
Right.
Usually
they're usually somewhat diplomatic.
They're super diplomatic, yeah. And he's like, oh yeah, Quentin sort of bought in, and we're like, okay. Okay, and then we're like, you mean bought into himself? He's like, oh yeah, and so then he tells this story. Oh, like, he really bought into himself, and he's like, he tells this story about how it was after Pulp Fiction, because you know, they sort of knew each other. He was on the set for True Romance, so they sort of knew each other, and I guess they were at a party somewhere, and they were like back to back in an elevator, and
back to back,
yeah, like they were like, it was sort of a crowded elevator. Oh, okay. And Quentin was turned one way and Bronson was turned the other, and then Quentin turned around to like yell something like at his to his girlfriend, and he saw Bronson there, and he's like, oh hey Bronson, you know, just because we're here doesn't mean we have to like talk to each other or anything like that.
Wait,
and was apparently totally serious.
Wait, Quentin said that?
Yeah.
Oh damn.
He's like, you know, just because we're like right and we're next to each other in this elevator doesn't mean we have to like talk or
Jesus. He did buy into himself.
Mm-hmm. But he had a series of stories like that, which was fun times.
I love Quentin Tarantino though.
Yeah.
Even though,
but it was cool. Like the second assistant director was there with like the shooting script with like all her notes on it.
Oh shit!
And you know, and she's worked on like a million movies, so she had a bunch of stories.
Yeah.
And
because Quentin
assistant directors don't really have to be like, they don't have to be diplomatic like actors. They could be like, oh yeah, so and so was a dick.
So who can talk the most shit? Like craft services?
Yeah, probably.
Just
yeah,
like, you know who eats like a dog?
Yeah, yeah. Craft services probably.
Forrest Whitaker. A ghost dog. He's like a goddamn ghost dog.
Just goes right through.
Saw him drink gravy like he was having miso soup.
Went right through him. Yeah. You have not seen Ghost Dog at all.
No, I have not. I know he's
a... You thought it was Casper?
Yeah. I thought he was like Slimer.
He's not an actual ghost. He's a samurai.
He's a samurai.
It's so funny.
They should have just called that movie Lazy Eye Samurai. It would have been more accurate, better, just a better title all around.
Yeah.
Now, if you guys are noticing OJ's laugh, he definitely has the most distinctive laugh in the San Francisco comedy scene. I think everybody will agree.
And it's part of his charm, too.
I apologize profusely.
Part of his charm. And I think the funniest thing is when like a comic will be on stage and you'll hear OJ in the back laughing. And maybe like sometimes there'll be times where OJ laughs, but the rest of the audience doesn't. Yeah. And I've seen it happen where the comic's like, thanks, OJ.
Yeah,
but then... The audience doesn't know who OJ is yet, so they just They half think the guy on stage just heard a black guy laughing and called him OJ, like so, like almost as just, like, oh yeah, thanks OJ, where he just, oh, this guy just calls every black guy OJ. That's really weird.
I never considered that.
No, football. I've seen it happen.
Football, Broncos, laughter. Those are the three things.
Yeah, right.
OJ Simpson was known for.
Yep, that's it. Damn, that's funny. Yeah, I like it because it's part of the same like supportive nature, you know, that you have, where it's like
sometimes it's not supportive though. Sometimes someone's bombing so hard.
Oh yeah,
at, like the punchline on like their second time up, so much confidence. Yeah. Especially if it's someone I don't respect.
Yeah,
I'm just like,
yeah, it's great. The thing
as a comic, there's nothing funnier than watching another comic bomb.
Oh my god,
it's the best.
It's so cathartic.
Yeah, yeah. It really is.
it just because it's, I don't know, it just makes you go like, yeah, it is. It's really hard, man.
Because well, it's more just like you're laughing at the absurdity of the comedic act almost.
Yeah, yeah. Because it shouldn't be happening.
Right,
one person,
people shouldn't be watching it. Like, it can happen, but it's in the public's eye.
Yeah,
that's what's weird about it. But it's funny because you, like, even when it is very obviously, you know, like you're laughing at someone who's like, jokes are just falling flat.
I'm laughing at the cosmic irony,
right? Yeah, but even so, it's still not hostile. There's a few, maybe it's just me, one of the female comedian, Nicole Kalasich. She I've known her for a long time, and I. Whenever a joke falls flat with me and I hear her laugh, it hurts.
It's very specific.
Really? I've
it's
never
a
heard
very
her
specific
mean,
cackle.
I've never heard it her is. Be mean.
What's that?
I haven't heard her do the mean laugh.
It's just I can hear it because I just
cuts through all the noise.
I guess so. I have like 10 years of experience knowing that laugh. So every time a joke just falls
10
flat.
10 years.
Yeah, no, I've known her since I was 18, 19 years old.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I love the ones where it's just like a very sharp laugh, proving that they weren't listening at all.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
Yeah.
You do not hear that joke.
Yeah.
I have this theory because I feel like more comedians have distinctive, strange laughs than like anybody else. You know, you got like Eddie Murphy's got a weird laugh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Joey Devine.
I think it comes from having to be stuck in a room where there's only like 10 people and you desperately want to give this person feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And so you,
well, you're also trying not to be beholden to regular people with their just not paying attention and like kind of angry that the comedy is on. You're just like, no, this is good. This is good.
All right.
Come on, everybody.
Yeah.
If you go, ha ha ha. Yeah. Come on, with me. Ha 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 ha. Yeah.
It's like the practice.
I think
laugh.
If you did that, that'd be a great host move. Where you're like, this is going to be like primal scream therapy. Come on, you guys. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha. Ha 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 ha. I'm doing a Woody Woodpecker thing now, but
I've seen it. I've seen hosts do that before. Yeah. Like, we're going to all do a practice laugh, and it's always made me cringe, but it's also always helped the show.
It does loosen them up. Like, yeah. You think it's the stupidest thing ever, but it probably works.
There's certain laughs that like when there is like one supportive audience member who is laughing at everything, it actually helps a lot.
Yeah.
Everyone in their vicinity laughs as well. Yeah. Because they feel comfortable, like they're not, their laugh is not going to be singled out because they've got someone else.
You also need like a obviously gay female minority group member
to
just
be cool
to make
with it.
Sure that just so the white people all know that they're allowed to laugh at whatever the comics
saying,
like, that is an important thing.
Yeah, otherwise like if someone makes anything that's even a little bit not PC, like a joke about something that's not PC, then
everyone looks over. Like,
yeah.
You also need that lady, regardless of ethnicity or class, you need that person with the arms crossed.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Oh yeah, yeah.
But as soon as they do the like, they do the hand over the face.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone's like, yeah. We got the cold one. All right, we can all laugh now.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that helps a lot.
All right. I got to get Patrick on.
Yeah.
I said that like it was a bad thing, but it's actually a really good
it's great
story. I'm excited for. We just leave the ringing in there.
Yeah.
It's a real, it's a natural way we do things around here. Patrick.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Great.
We gained one more person since we last talked to you.
Oh, it's not just Matt and Vince?
No.
Who else is there?
OJ Patterson's here also.
Hi.
Hi, OJ.
Hello.
So, I didn't know... well, the fact that your show got canceled was just sort of the late breaking news, the icing on the cake. So, condolences.
Thank you very much. It's a pretty big bummer. We're pretty proud of the show. And I know, you know, Justin has been vocal that the first go-round with this character, we might have missed the mark on.
Oh, really?
It seems like... you know, we felt like we got it right this time, you know, basing a TV character off of Justin's real life dad,
right.
Sam Halpern, and Christopher Maloney was in the role. And I mean, he really nailed it. I mean, everybody on the cast was great. We had Rachel Harris and a cast of young up and coming actors as well that were, I thought, killing it. But, we unfortunately were not killing it in the ratings, and we kind of languished behind American Idol on Thursday nights. And they sealed our fate today. We've got one more episode airing on Thursday at 9:30, 8:30 Central after American Idol. And
so
then
what is this, the sixth episode?
This is the seventh.
We actually
shot eight. There's a chance they're going to air the lost episode because that makes it sound way more mysterious.
Yep.
In July, along with not that this is in July, but they're also going to air Enlisted, the last four episodes of that show that they haven't aired. So, yeah, it sounds like there's a decent chance that'll air, that all eight will air eventually. But for the time being, it's just the seventh one airing tomorrow night, Thursday night, which is now our technically our series finale.
Oh, I hate TV so much.
This one got better reviews than Shit My Dad Says, didn't it?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, it wasn't super hard to accomplish, but it got remarkably good reviews. The LA Times said it was the best new comedy of the season, so that was pretty cool.
Well, do they just not listen to anything but ratings? Is it just how it works?
I mean, that's a huge part of it. The system that is in place right now to meter ratings is pretty archaic.
Yeah, it's still the Nielsen system, right?
It is, and there are literally fewer than 30,000 Nielsen boxes in the entire country metering however many million Americans who have television. And, you know, it's so fractured, you know, the television offerings out there. You know, it's you don't no longer have your NBC, CBS, and ABC. You know, there's like literally 500 channels that you can watch, and the internet. So
yeah,
it kind of seems like anecdotal evidence at this point. You know, the only thing that they can truly accurately measure across the board, like nationwide, is Hulu.
Right.
But those ratings don't. They don't count quite as much, apparently. And I don't know. I think every network is different.
Yeah. Does it count? Are they counting if you DVR it too, or are they just counting like?
They're counting it if you DVR it and you have a Nielsen box.
Right. Okay. But yeah.
So, yes. And Fox is unique in that they actually count live plus three ratings, which are basically means if you watch it. Anytime the night that it originally aired and then up to like 72 hours afterwards, it actually counts as a rating, but those don't come out until like, in our case, it was like we aired on a Thursday night. We got the live plus threes on a Thursday, and we were actually going up really significantly. We were going up like 40% in the ratings. And then, you know, eventually it kind of like tapered off a little bit. Well, it tapered off 1 week. We dropped down to like a 20% gain in live plus threes. And then it was, and you know, I don't know. I don't think that was like the nail in the coffin per se. You know, there's a million variables that probably were in play. Obviously, like their development schedule and the pilots they had in the mix, and what they had available on their fall and mid-season schedule. But it is a bit of a letdown considering that those who saw it seemed to really enjoy it for the most part. And obviously, like with somebody like Chris Maloney. He's a guy who is a bona fide TV star. He's been on Law & Order SVU for 12 seasons.
Yeah.
And, took a year off, then did our show, and was looking to get into comedy, and we lucked out and got him. And
he was great in Oz, too.
He was fantastic in Oz. I mean, he has the craziest, most dedicated fan base.
Yeah.
They call themselves Malonians.
That's I would have gone with scary.
Maloniacs, but yeah. that's just me.
Maloners.
And they are legion.
So how did you get the call?
Actually, it was Justin who called me. And he had just heard from Warner Brothers, so it was kind of like a chain. And then we had to in turn become the messengers, the harbingers of doom.
Oh, nice.
And call the cast, and then call the writing staff. Super fun. Yeah.
So the reason I wanted to have you on this week, I mean, this was just icing, and I didn't know you were going to have a whole other story of failure.
There's no real story. The show's over.
What's that?
There's no real story. The show's over.
Right. Okay.
Let's move on.
So I talked to Justin this week, and he told me about. He's like, "Oh, I'm supposed to be at Pat's wedding right now," and I was like, "Oh, wow. What? Why aren't you? What happened?" And I thought it was a pretty crazy story, so I was hoping that you could tell it yourself.
That I can. I lived it not so long ago. So basically, my fiance and I have been planning this wedding for a good year, better part of a year. We're going to go up to lovely Big Sur on the central coast of California.
Right.
And have a beach wedding, about 70 people or so. It's going to be just absolutely lovely.
Sounds
beautiful, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so fast forward to Wednesday of last week, and it's about 4 in the morning. Haven't been able to sleep because I am experiencing excruciating pain in my anus. Mm. And,
man.
Okay. Now, I'm kind of an old pro when it comes to hemorrhoids, so I'm thinking like, you know, oh, it's another one. Here we go.
Yeah.
This is annoying, but it's going to go away in a couple days. But this one like was a particularly egregiously hurtful. And
hurtful.
So, it was. And so I woke up my fiance and I said, I'm going to need you to do something. I'm going to need you to spread my ass cheeks and see if there's a hemorrhoid in there. Uh-huh. And she didn't know what to expect. She had never seen one before or done a rectal exam before. Uh-huh. And so we go into the bathroom.
And what does she do for a living? She's not like a nurse or anything.
No, she's an architect.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe she learned something from this.
Yeah,
but,
it's similar.
Yeah. So go into the bathroom, and I drop trowel and bend over, and she unfortunately does not have the best bedside manner because the first thing out of her mouth is, "Holy shit."
Oh.
And so I start screaming like, "Why are you doing that? Why are you saying it? What does it look like? Just tell me what it looks like." And she says, "Well, I can't actually see your butthole."
Damn.
Oh man.
It is actually like covered. There is like an anal eclipse.
of the heart.
Total eclipse of the anus, yeah.
And so I'm like, well, fuck. You know, it's like 6 a.m. I gotta do something about this because I need to nip this in the bud. So so we end up going to a clinic up the street. Because it's the only place that's like open, and I see this guy, and he kind of basically does the same holy shit reaction, but you know, with the doctor's sense of decorum, and he's like, "Yep, that is a very large hemorrhoid, and you're gonna want to get that probably taken care of manually."
So explain a hemorrhoid. It's like a blood vessel that comes out of your ass.
So, okay, there's two different kinds of hemorrhoids. There are internal ones, which I don't believe I have. There are external ones. And the external ones are basically, they are like, I think the best way that I can describe them are they're like engorged veins.
Ugh.
So like when you're looking at my asshole with the, the external one, it actually like it isn't like nasty in the sense of like, oh, it's like bloody and like purple or anything like that. It actually just, it looks like a balloon of skin.
Mm.
Okay, so it's more like cartoonish.
Okay.
Than anything. Yeah, it looks like, you know, Elmer Fudd's nose. So,
on your body.
On my butt. Yeah. Yeah. And but I think it's like it's essentially like a vein that there has been so much like pressure put on it. Like generally what these things occur in people who like movers or people my ATV rolled down a sand dune. I'm going to try and Superman it, you know, and lift it over. And then you push too hard. And
a blood vessel just comes out. What were you doing?
Sure. Now, I don't know what I was doing. I will say sometimes they are caused by stress. And I will say that the sort of nexus of getting married like a few days prior at the time or a few days after versus wondering what the hell the fate of surviving Jack was going to be might have contributed to it. I'm not really sure. I don't remember trying to lift a refrigerator or anything like that. But, you know, this has
you
been...
You just wore that stress right on your asshole.
Yeah.
Trying to lift your spirits.
So there I am in the clinic, and the doctor's like, "All right, let's get this checked out. I'm gonna make a few calls. I know a couple. I know a guy.
Isn't he the guy?
No, because he's just like the general.
Oh, okay.
Practitioner. He's like, you need to see a specialist for this because it could require surgery,
like a proctologist.
Exactly, like a proctologist.
Yeah.
So, he ends up getting this guy like third try, and it's this doctor in Beverly Hills. He is a proctologist. He is a surgeon, and he says, "All right, let's see." This was like 9 o'clock in the morning. He's like, "Can he come in at 11?" I'm like, "Fuck yes, I can come in at 11 whenever you need me." And he's like, "All right, I'll take a look at it, and if it looks like we got to operate, I'll do it at noon. This is a routine procedure.
Uh-huh.
I can do this in my office. It's no big deal. No sweat." So less than 5 hours after this whole thing starts, I find myself kneeling down over a special, I guess, rectal surgical operating table.
Uh-huh.
That is like a hump, and there's a pad for you to put your knees on.
Yeah.
And it elevates. And there I am in a gown, in a hospital gown. There are four doctors or three nurses and this surgeon spreading my ass cheeks and numbing my anus with lidocaine or whatever it was. Yeah. So I actually had to get injected with a needle in my butthole.
Yeah.
And one of the nurses goes, "Hey, we have Pandora. Is there anything you'd like to listen to?" And so I'm thinking, like, what is appropriate for this? Is
butthole
like
surfers.
Like, you know, or is it? I think I ended up asking them to put on Jimmy Buffett.
That's actually perfect.
So, and then at one point, like, right before they're about to, like, inject me, and which was the worst part by far, because it was the only part I could actually feel.
Yeah, you're right. Not numb yet.
Yeah. Before that, they go, "All right, let's do a patient check." And I see like one of the nurses go over to a chart, and they're like, it's like, "Okay, we're looking at Patrick Schumacher. He has an external thrombosed hemorrhoid." And okay, I thought for a fleeting moment they were gonna like they had the wrong guy, and they were like they had the wrong patient. You know, like they were gonna like perform. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Anything. I don't know. I was in the most vulnerable position of my life with four people, you know, behind me going
to
town.
Anything to you.
Yeah.
And all I remember, and I'm awake for this thing, and it's like a 20-minute procedure, and all the doctor kept saying to me was like, there were two things. You're doing great, and I need you to relax.
Jesus.
And so 20 minutes later, it's done. He goes, "Wow, man, I took out like you had a lot of blood clots in there." He took out four blood clots from this hemorrhoid.
Jesus.
And I have a picture of them if you'd like to put it on the website.
Oh yes, hell yeah.
It's literally just the clots sitting on a piece of gauze. It's not a picture of my asshole.
I want to see the clots. Yeah, for sure. I love that shit.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty. I'll have to like tell you what the scale is. So you know, and he didn't tell me that he was gonna like electrocauterize it. So I'm like, why does it smell like burnt hair? And he's like, oh, I'm sealing it up right now. And then you know, they wheeled me back in, thumbs up. I stick some gauze up there, oh. and I'm like, all right, I'm still getting married. And then, the next night, or that night, I am tossing and turning again. It still feels like, I'm talking like, now I can only gauge this from my fiance's assessment, but she is an architect, so it's probably accurate, that it was the diameter of a quarter.
Jesus.
What was?
So, she also said golf ball once.
Wait, what was the diameter?
The hemorrhoid.
Okay.
It's like, imagine if you're spinning a quarter, like basically, it, you know, thereby making it a sphere, like that is like the size of it.
Okay.
So that night I'm tossing and turning again. I'm like, holy fuck, this isn't getting any better. She takes a look at it again. She's like, holy shit, it's not getting any better. Uh-huh. Call the doctor. This doctor was incredible. He gave me his cell phone. Like it was amazing. And like checked up on me in the morning, et cetera, et cetera. So came back in. He looked at it again. He's like, you know, you are a bleeder. and you have actually hemorrhaged back into the hemorrhoid.
Oh. Wow.
So I need to do it again, only this time it's going to stick. So he's like, I have to put you under general anesthesia and we're gonna go in, we're gonna clean everything out, and then we're gonna suture your butthole.
What did they use for general anesthesia?
So it's like they give you the IV, and uh-huh. I don't know exactly what they injected me with, but then they also gas me.
Yeah,
you know?
Nice.
So it's just this horrible, like metallic tasting gas, but you're out, like boom, like 3, 2, 1, gone.
Yeah,
and so you know, it was like a 30-minute procedure. I think I wake up. Got a terrible hangover. My throat hurts because they had to stick the air tube down your throat and
right.
all that shit. But he's like, I got it. It's stitched up. You know, but you're probably going to be on your back for like a couple days. And I'm like, well, fuck, a couple days. It's Thursday now. I'm supposed to get married Saturday. And it's a road trip, a 6-hour road trip to Big Sur from Los Angeles. So at that point, it was like, you know, my little hospital waiting area or surgical center waiting area turned into the situation room, and it was like my fiance and her parents were in the room saying, like, there is no shame in postponing this wedding.
Oh my God.
How much would an ambulance cost?
Yeah,
from LA to Big Sur.
Like, maybe I could get airlifted to Big Sur.
Yeah, right.
It would have been like the most uncomfortable wedding experience I could think of. You know, it's like, all right, it's time for the bride and groom's first dance.
Yeah, like, yeah, right.
Like, I'm just doing the robot while she's dancing around me.
She's just spinning your gurney.
Exactly. So, you know, we ended up having to fucking postpone the wedding and the honeymoon. But, we were supposed to go to Japan. I was supposed to leave for Japan yesterday. For like 12 days, and the doctor was just like, man, had you left this go unchecked, you would have been in a Tokyo hospital. So I kind of dodged a bullet on that
for sure.
Front.
Oh, why? I bet a Tokyo hospital would be awesome.
I'm sure the Tokyo hospitals are a fantastic facility.
They would have just given you a milk enema and taped it. It would have been, it would have been weird. You lucked out for sure.
No, the Japanese, one thing they know how to do is pamper your asshole. Have you seen their toilets where they have like different temperature settings for the bidet?
Yeah, and it hoses you off and like with a warm stream.
Yeah.
I'm not into the bidets.
Me neither.
No?
It scares me.
Nah, because like...
It's too surprising, and then there's water going up there.
It's super uncomfortable. Like, have you ever tried to, like, you know, stick the whole nozzle in your asshole? It's just fucking...
The whole nozzle?
That's what you're supposed to do, right? you just
No, that's how you get hemorrhoids.
Oh, shit.
So... Approximately how much money do you think you're out because of having to postpone a wedding is one thing, having to postpone a destination wedding and a honeymoon like 3 days before?
I have to say the Japanese have been very cooperative.
Okay.
I literally am out $50.
Wow.
For the honeymoon.
Yeah.
I was able to cancel like hotels and all that stuff. It was airline miles, you know. So that was great. I had to pay 10% for my Japanese rail pass. That was it. And then the wedding was a little different. I have to say though, like the venue for the reception is this place called Big Sur Bakery. It's really good food if you ever get a chance to go. I cannot endorse them more highly, especially after how well they have treated us. I mean, they were just like, okay, yeah, if you guys need to move it, we understand.
Can I ask you a question? Did you tell them what the medical issue was?
And did you have a picture just so they knew you were fucking serious?
Because that's the whole thing is like because you can pretty much get out of anything. Like, listen, a medical emergency came up and we have to cancel.
My butthole blew out.
Yeah, but if you're like, I got the worst butthole in the world right now, like that's what just makes it worse, you know? Like,
because yeah, so, everybody poops.
Did you tell them that it was a hemorrhoid?
Some of the vendors asked, some of them did not.
God, who asks?
The DJ was surprisingly curious.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, you know, the DJ, their lives are not anything.
I got like four different versions of Gangnam Style. I was really excited for this. Yeah, right.
I've got the butthole injury remix. So, no, like they didn't ask. They just knew that I had two, like, quote-unquote emergency. I mean, it wasn't life-threatening, but it was, like, kind of dire. Like, I needed to get it done, like, pretty soon.
Right.
I would have had to get it done over the weekend, if not, like, on Wednesday, Thursday of last week. So,
yeah.
No, like, some of them required a doctor's note, and that doctor's note went into gross detail of what happened.
But yeah, mostly get refunds?
I got some refunds. Or not refunds, but like, you know, postponements. Like, right. Like our photographer was awesome. Like, he was like, I understand and I will move this and, you know, no extra cost. So, yeah, okay. Like there were like, we had like a fucking shuttle service that needed the doctor's notes. So that's still TBD.
okay. You know, more
there's a stuff. It was a big DIY wedding.
More or less than 10 grand.
Oh man. Again, TBD. It is possible that it's going to be upwards of that.
Yeah, which is like way low from what I was imagining from having to postpone a destination wedding like this the week of.
Yeah, no, it, no, we lucked out like crazy. I am eternally grateful to the people that were lenient.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool of them. I mean, it just. Jesus, man.
If you got butt problems, I feel bad. No.
Jeez. But, you know, I agreed to come on the podcast today because I want to talk about hemorrhoid awareness.
Are you starting a nonprofit?
I really should, man. Yeah. I mean, it. Well, yeah, they are they're not life-threatening. But fuck, they hurt.
That should be your slogan. They're not life-threatening, but fuck, they hurt.
They're just definitely convenience-threatening, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I will say that Matt had a sad realization one time on the podcast when we were talking about fiber and how we all rock the psyllium husks.
Yeah.
And he was like, wait, is this like our life now where we have to think about the fibers so we can poop good? And me and Brendan and Ben are just like, yeah, well, yeah, man. If you want to have good poops, just you better get on that fiber. Now
I'm still not on the fiber. But
now you see why, though.
No, I do. I understand it. I just remember like being like, you guys all were like, hey, wait, how old are you? I was like, 28. And you're like, oh, man, yeah. You should have been eating that fiber a long time ago. I just felt like my asshole was immediately in jeopardy. I was like, holy fuck.
It's never too late to start eating fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should start.
Well, it was Justin who turned me on to the kale smoothie. Which,
oh, that is like clockwork, man. That's a Starbucks venti iced coffee for me.
Oh, I even pimp it out with a little Benefiber and some flaxseed. Oh, man.
You guys really...
That is serious. That is a fucking colon blow. You remember that?
Yeah, colon blow as a milk course.
Control? Yeah.
Fuck.
Man.
That's serious. I have been on basically a 95% fiber diet since this all occurred. Yeah, I'm on like Fiber One bars and... I'm mixing in the Metamucil. I'm eating tons more like fruits and vegetables and everything. And I went from taking one really disgusting shit a day to three just beautifully formed shits per day.
Just museum caliber.
Oh yeah. Quality stuff.
I wonder about the fiber is it like, you know, a race to the bottom sort of thing where, excuse my punning, but is it like I want to take the fiber to be regular, but aren't I just conditioning my body to need more fiber?
I don't know. I don't know if that's how it works. I'm still kind of a novice to the fiber thing. Uh-huh. So I don't know. We should look that up and probably post it on Film Drunk.
Yeah. So okay. So after the, you know, after the surgery and everything, so then like do they do it so that you can shit afterwards or how?
Yeah.
Does it...
I mean, look, they drained the thing, so you know it is a much smaller sphere.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I will not say it was pleasant to use the bathroom, but you know, it worked. There wasn't any sort of like blockage, mm-hmm. and it got out.
Did you spray everywhere? It was like putting a thumb over a hose.
just spraying it like a rhino.
Yeah, they like changed the architecture of my butthole, so it's like the Play-Doh Fun Factory.
Oh.
Who wants spaghetti?
I'm making hair.
Hey, can you make it a star poop?
Yeah. Oh, no, people pay a lot of money in Beverly Hills for that.
Right.
Yeah, they just make star poos.
No, I want a star of David, actually.
Yeah.
How dare you?
But no, I was actually able to do it. I was having so much fiber, and like there's two different kinds of fiber apparently. Like there's the soluble fiber, or like the fiber found in foods, and then there's like the Metamucil, which actually firms it up. And apparently I shouldn't have been downing so much of that because there were times where I was literally jumping up and down over the toilet hoping that it would come out because I didn't want to push.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It all goes wrong at once, man. That's just how it goes. Rule of threes, though. You only got one more tragedy to deal with.
Well, at least you were... Yeah, that's nice. At least the show hadn't got canceled yet. You probably had full health coverage.
Yeah, well, no, that's all good. We're in the Writers Guild. Nice. Top-notch insurance in that. So,
good.
You know, I'm not looking forward to getting the medical bills, but I think, you know, it was necessary surgery. I don't think they're gonna chalk this up to some sort of weird experimental thing.
When's your favorite time to take a shit?
I know, I'm like pleading my case in front of the WGA tribunal. A man needs to be able to take a shit. Mr. Schumacher, we've heard your words.
Mr. Schumacher goes to Washington. That's great.
Yeah. I bet the Writers Guild insurance is probably more used to dealing with ass problems than...
Oh my God, are you kidding? Absolutely. I mean...
Just a bunch of sedentary writers who are all stress cases.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Justin and I are as a writing partnership, are 100%, you know, anal...
Yeah.
What I call it. We got anal problems, you know?
That's a bad writing partner if he didn't get you turned on to the kale smoothies, you know, like he didn't get you on the fiber when you needed it.
He did tell me about their magic, but I don't have he has a Vitamix.
Yeah.
Mm.
And those things can actually make soup without like they go so fast. It's like having like a Porsche engine in a blender and they go so fast that they can actually heat up the soup
flash.
Blends it.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. Like if you're going to mix kale, like I tried to do it with a hand blender.
No.
And then it's just like you're just like siphoning like chewed up kale through your teeth.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
I don't have a Vitamix, but I have like, you know, I have a higher end consumer line blender, and it works fine. Nice. You can't use a hand blender though. That's just
No. It was all I had at my disposal at the time. So
that's not gonna work.
No, it's not.
Also, what you had to, you just got to put your kale like in a pot or something?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
But yeah, you know, this whole experience really like really put things into perspective for me. You know, I was like, oh man, like, you know, we're gonna get married. We're still gonna get married. You know, no matter what, and you know, no matter what happens with the TV show. You know, like it's only television, and like we're gonna do other things.
Was this the first time she had to look at your asshole with concern?
It was. She actually said like 5 minutes later. She's like, well, you know, it's after getting the bad news about the wedding. She was like, well, I have seen your asshole, so it's basically like we're married already. So.
Your asshole is the circle of trust. She's now inside that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different type of
wedding
ring.
Will you take this ring piece?
Yeah. I know. With this O-ring, I do
it. Oh, man.
I was going to say, because before tonight, I was thinking, oh, well, now at least you have like a cool storyline that you can incorporate into Surviving Jack somehow.
But I feel like this is another show.
Right.
I feel like you've got another pitch coming right now. All ass
it's
problems.
Like it's a late night Comedy Central animated show called Butthole and Hemorrhoids. No, I mean, it's funny you said that. Last Friday or so, I got a call from Chris Maloney, and he was just trying to get the scoop on you know, the fate of the show, see if I knew anything. And he's like, hey, when's the big day, by the way? And I'm like, well, told him the whole thing, and he was just like, sounds like a story for Surviving Jack.
Yeah.
And yeah, sadly, we won't get to do it. But you're absolutely right. I'm going to pitch that next week.
For sure.
It's actually, you know what? Bill Lawrence already sold it to ABC. So,
Perfect. You got it.
Is that – I mean, do you find that – I don't find that condescending, but I definitely think that – you know, if you're a comic or a writer, anytime something bad happens in your life, people are like, hey, well, now you got another story for your act.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't find it condescending at all. I mean, because even if you did, you'd be like, yeah, they're right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, it's totally, it's not wrong.
No.
But I remember during grad school, this girl in my program, like her apartment burned down. And you know, and almost everything that she wrote was like, you know, ordeal type memoir pieces.
Right.
So yeah. Of course everybody's like, oh, well, you know, you got a story to tell now. And she's just like, she just answered real sad. She's like, yeah, everybody says that.
Right. Everyone keeps saying that, but it also, the fire took my laptop and all my pens and paper. So
yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, but you know, fucking, hey, you know what? Buttholes heal. You know, marriages are forever. Right. I don't know what I'm saying.
Sales.
Yeah, buttholes heal. Yeah.
I wish I could sing that theme song right now. Yeah. I don't remember how it goes, but
I know every kiss begins with K.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah, that's great. That that's.
Oh my god, that would actually be an amazing Zales commercial with the silhouettes. And like, it's, yeah, you just see the guy bending over.
And just
like,
a golf ball.
She's spreading his cheeks. And, honey, can you look at this?
Yeah.
And then she pulls the ring out of his butt cheek.
Yeah.
That actually, that's a crazy story that, like, there are all these, like, legends of the writer's room. I can't remember what writer. This actually happened to, but this has been passed around for probably a good 10 years amongst TV writers' rooms. And basically, there was a writer who was ready to, he woke his wife up, similarly to what I did with my fiance, and said, hey, I think, you know, there's something wrong with my asshole. I think I have, yes. I think I have an anal polyp, is what he said. So that's like potentially serious, because that's like potentially cancerous, you know, whatever. And so, you know, he kneels down on the bed, and the wife, you know, spreads his cheeks, and he like half poops out an engagement ring and asks her if she'll marry him.
That's amazing.
That was the way that he did it.
I love that guy already.
What,
yeah.
What did she say?
I think, are they married? I only heard the say part, and I thought you were going to continue. I thought you were just like, say? Yeah. That's quite a story.
Did she say yes?
Yes, she did say yes.
Oh,
I mean, yeah, wow. I figure, like, if you live with a guy who's willing to do that, it's probably not the first time that he's right. done something like that. So
you should hope so.
She teared up and just said, of course.
Yes. Oh, she just immediately put the poo, like a poo covered ring on her finger.
It was my grandmother's.
Yeah. Yeah, she smuggled it out of Poland. Guess where she put it?
Oh, yes.
Oh. Butt stuff, man.
It's like Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction.
Exactly.
This ring.
Oh,
butt diamonds. God.
Well, do you have anything to plug after that, Pat?
Oh, that's the fucking, that is the slickest butt plug joke I've ever heard.
Slick.
Kudos to you.
Yeah.
Ew.
I think that's like, you end the podcast on something like that.
Yeah, right. We're done, right?
Yeah.
Just drop the mic.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2 in theaters right now. I have nothing to plug other than my wedding in Big Sur, August 16th, 2014.
Right. Okay, if you're in the area, you guys, check that out.
Yeah.
If you're in a boat or on a helicopter.
And if you want to see a fully healed butthole.
Yeah. And check out Film Drunk tomorrow to see pictures of the blood clots.
Oh, yeah, please send me those blood clots.
I will email you.
Because I will 100% post those.
That is all I have going on right now. You know, Justin and I are starting some work with Warner Brothers for the next couple of years, actually, in June. So we're excited about that. We don't know what that is going to bring, other than we're going to be developing more projects for them.
Killer.
We're super excited about that. They've been amazing and awesome to us, and we love working with them.
That's
so
beautiful.
Well, if you need like a tall, dewy, weak guy with like a mustache, I know one, or like, you know, a cool black guy with some sideburns.
Yeah.
There's two right here.
That's us. Saying. That's
it's
us.
It's a very specific archetype.
Yeah, yeah.
But I promise you, I will email you that photo.
All right.
Sweet.
Thank you guys so much for
Before you go, we're about to talk. Oh, I know you gotta go, but we're just about to talk about True Romance. So if you have any thoughts on it to get us started, you know,
just give us one question about it, and we'll start talking about it.
Ask you a question about it?
Sure.
I thought you said just ask us one question.
Just
that I emailed you 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Man, what to say about True Romance? I haven't seen it in a while, but it's a fucking amazing movie from the 90s, written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Tony Scott. What can I say?
Well, you got the basics out of the way.
Cool.
Yeah, great soundtrack. My fiance is shouting things at me. Nice. It's one of her favorite movies.
Oh really? Cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That's a tidbit.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Thank you, guys.
Heal that butt, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're an inspiration.
Talk to you guys soon.
See ya.
Peace.
Bye.
Now, I'm not going to... I like the soundtrack, but I differ with a lot of people on this. I really don't like the score, like, at all.
Yeah, I don't remember
the
score.
You mean the Ferngully-esque...
Yeah. Here, I think I got a clip. I think I got a clip of it.
It sounds like an even worse ringtone than marimba.
Yeah.
It's Hans Zimmer, right?
Yeah, it is Hans Zimmer. See, the thing is, like, I think it sounds great at the end when they're in Cancun.
Yeah.
But when he's in Detroit
and
he's going to kill a pimp by shooting him in the face and he's driving through, like, snow-covered streets in Detroit, you're like, why the fuck is there Calypso music playing right now?
It's pizzicato strings, man. That shit sounds beautiful. Yeah. It's the contrast. You just don't get it because you don't understand.
But everybody just, like, blows Hans Zimmer so much. And, look, I think the song's great, but the thing about scores is, like, you got to incorporate it in a way that's not obnoxious to the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think they did that very well, but anyway.
Do you think that they had a tone shift at any time filming or editing, or because it seems like some scenes were meant to do, it was supposed to be an emotional element on a different level than what it ended up being.
Yeah, I don't think I mean, I definitely don't think Tony Scott probably was thinking about it in the same. I think there's bits of the script he probably didn't fully get. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You took notes. So
I took notes.
Let me know. I want to hear your thoughts.
It was the first time I've ever seen True Romance, which in the context of the show,
yeah,
call it Poo Romance.
Oh. Yeah, there it is.
You know, we're not all about the scat. We're trying to, you know, make this more,
yeah,
make this more high-minded, like an NPR style. Yeah. Yeah. It's never going to happen.
Yeah,
diminishing returns.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. Did this come out before Reservoir Dogs?
It came out after, but it was. But Tarantino wrote it before. He was working on the set of The Last Boy Scout. I'm not sure in what capacity. Which I love The Last Boy Scout, by the way. So Tony Scott, someone that that Tarantino knew, was like, "Oh man, you got to read these scripts. These are fucking crazy." And Tony Scott apparently liked them both and wanted to do them. And
yeah.
Tarantino said, "You can have one of them."
Yeah.
And he took True Romance. Oh. And so True Romance was written before, but it came out after Reservoir Dogs.
Okay. Well, they say to write what you know, uh-huh. And Quentin Tarantino really knows white people saying the N-word.
That he does, yeah.
That is one thing he knows more than anything else, maybe. Other than gratuitous violence. Yeah.
I was like, did they ask me to do this show because of yeah. this one scene?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that scene is insane.
So I think that's an interesting scene in that I think I feel like he put that whole thing about Sicilians in there because he was like trying to subtly give himself leeway to have his characters say the N-word a lot.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh no, I'm Sicilian. Oh, like, yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino finds ways.
Like, and also, like, he also overdoes, like, all the Italian slurs because they're sort of like, see, my people have been discriminated against, too. Like,
right,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't think, I've never heard another movie where they, like, say WAP so much.
Right.
It's like, where you're like, I don't think he would really say that.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Well, I don't know. Detroit seems pretty. It seems like anything could happen in Detroit.
Yeah, that's true. All bets are off, especially on like the racist.
You know who I feel really bad for?
Yeah,
I feel bad for Eminem because he had to grow up with this being like one of his favorite movies.
Yeah.
On geographical loyalty alone.
Yeah,
just like yeah, I guess I just got to live that fucking weird Detroit lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like weirdly, just casually racist
white dudes with dreads. Which, oh man,
yeah,
this was the perfect time to be a Gary Oldman fan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just everybody, all of them bad guys, all of them crazy outfits and hairstyles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I've never hated a dude with dreadlocks least. Like he was pretty.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what accent he was doing, but I had an affinity.
Yeah,
yeah. It was pretty weird, but I feel like he, like James Franco owes him a check.
Yeah, yeah.
Because definitely. That character probably influenced Riff Raff, which yeah. influenced James Franco. So just give him,
interesting.
Give Gary Oldman a check.
Here's a couple relevant excerpts from the True Romance oral history that was in Maxim a few years ago. So Tony Scott says, Gary called me out of the blue and said, I've got it. I know exactly who this guy is. He's my drug dealer. Oldman, my drug dealer. Tony would get me fucking arrested, wouldn't he? I've never had a drug dealer. I organized Drexel's dreadlocks under my own steam. Then I went to a dentist who made the teeth. Then I thought about giving him a weird eye. I'm only in the film for about 10 minutes. I wanted to make my mark.
Yeah.
I heard this gang of black kids outside my trailer and thought, that's Drexel. I showed this kid my lines and said, does this theme seem authentic? He changed some words. He said, that don't fly. Drexel wouldn't say titties. He'd say breastises. And then
yeah.
Tarantino, those kids were clowning him, and he believed them because he didn't know any better because he's British.
No, breastises worked way better than titties.
I think it works because there's like a fakeness to it, and that's kind of the whole point of Drexel.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. He was just like this big phony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why didn't it... I feel like they could have added another hour and just explain why these people live the lives that they do.
Yeah.
Because there's certain elements where I'm just like, all right, he's a cool guy being cool, whatever Christian Slater's character is. But there had to be, he had to be, have some type of military training to just like do every single thing. Or he had to be in the mob at one point. There's just so much nuance to why he's doing the things he's doing. And I have no idea. And it's so weird. But,
what do you mean, the like the violent stuff?
The violent stuff, but also like, how are you going to work at a comic book shop for 4 years and get a purple Cadillac? Like, he had to be into some dark shit before.
Well, I read that like there is an odd regional authenticity. Like, it's weird because Tarantino grew up in L.A., but there is a weird regional authenticity to it, I think, because like there is a thing where a lot of people in Detroit just drive like crazy muscle cars because it's like the home of. Right. And actually, in the script, I think it was a red Ford Mustang, and Tony Scott changed it to a purple Cadillac for some reason. But so yeah, so that felt accurate. And then the part where Alabama
free car day, everyone get your free car because you're in Detroit. Yeah.
They're closing the shop.
But but I do think like there's more shitty muscle car, like old muscle cars that people know how to fix up and all that shit. But
makes sense.
But then Alabama, you know, she's from Tallahassee, and he's like, "Who's your favorite movie star?" And she's like, "Burt Reynolds." And I think that is 100% accurate because I know a bunch of Florida State grads, and Burt Reynolds went to Florida State, and fucking everybody from Florida State goddamn loves them some Burt Reynolds.
Interesting.
And I don't know. I think I see the same thing with the Cadillac, but I don't know. That's just my read on it.
Yeah. Well, I got to take a piss.
Okay.
And then I got to go.
Oh, you got to go?
Yeah, I got to go.
Like right now?
I mean, unless we're going to talk about Froggy Fresh, though, that's the thing.
Hold on, you watched this movie.
I did see this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this movie.
Okay.
Well, you want me? I mean, yeah. All right. Well, I mean, well, we can keep talking about it for sure. I'm really interested in Froggy Fresh is all I'm saying.
Okay.
But nah, let's talk about the movie. I can wait. I don't need to go to Concord right immediately. Let's do this. True Romance.
Concord?
Concord. How do you say it? I don't know how people
Con-con?
Yeah, I'm going Con-con. I like that it was called True Romance.
Mm-hmm.
And that they never say how much they love each other. They just say how cool each other are.
Well, see, that's my favorite thing about it. Because I read the whole thing as, like, clearly Clarence Worley is Quentin Tarantino. Like, there's no question. Mm-hmm. Guy who works at a video store. Guy who works at a comic book store.
Yeah.
And so, basically...
Loves kung fu movies.
Yeah. Basically, Clarence Worley is the Quentin Tarantino if he was a superhero. Like, he's created a superhero based on himself.
Right.
100%. And so, like, you know, there's the old questions where people are like, oh, would you rather fly or be invisible? You know, like, what superpower would be your superpower?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino's superpower clearly is, like, I'm so cool. Like, everybody just thinks I'm so cool.
I'm cool, man.
I can bullshit anyone.
Yeah.
And I understand human nature because I've watched a lot of movies.
Right.
Like, that's the entire character where it's like... He knows how to play any situation. He knows how to like schmooze the movie producer. The cops think he's super cool. There's this chick who like is paid to fuck him, but she just likes like my favorite part is when she's just like totally falling for him, just Google eyes for him, is when he's explaining a Spider-Man comic.
Yeah.
And there's like tinkling piano music.
Yeah, I never actually considered that just being Quentin Tarantino's like ultimate fantasy.
No, it's his id. The whole fucking character is completely Tarantino's id.
Yeah. I know where them titties are from, Quentin Tarantino. I bet he said that at a party a couple times.
Breast assists.
Well, apparently he wrote titties.
I know, but he got clowned. I'm thinking titties is breast assist was right. That kid was right.
Yeah.
So was Gary Oldman.
That'd be so weird. Like an older, like think about being a teenage black kid.
Excuse me, son. Hey, I was wondering.
Yeah.
What you thought of this script?
I was reading this script right here, and I thought maybe you could give it
or play a pimp.
Yeah.
And this guy comes in and he's got some cocaine.
Hello, hello. Oh, I could see your kid from the street. What will you say?
You look like a street child.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Fucking Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. But yeah, it's that's why it's hilarious to me, because it's just like, I mean, it's very rough. I feel like if he would have directed it himself, he probably would have softened just the intense Tarantino-isms of it.
Yeah.
But because he didn't, it's just such like rough draft of him where it's like,
yeah,
God is all like weird little kind of racist shit in there. And then
there's always, you know what I love about Tarantino movies? There's always the BuzzFeed character who just has like 20 facts about one thing that you no one's thought about and no one wants to think about. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, yeah, there's like 20 different tales about a lie. I've been around a liar all my life. Like, you fucking, you just, you're showing off now, Tarantino. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Well, that was funny because that was like that monologue was so overwritten. And then just to have Christopher Walken read a wildly like overwrought speech is perfect, because he's like, he's doing the ultimate. If you want to do a Christopher Walken impression, you can just watch that speech like 100 times, where he's like, the angel of death. And when you get to heaven, tell him you never heard of a guy that's so scary as me, you know. And he's like, you're a cantaloupe, you know. It's just like,
yeah. You're a cantaloupe.
But it's, yeah, that whole monologue where he's, it's never gonna get better than this, it's gonna get worse, you know. Yeah. It's just, like, it's just this long monologue where you're not sure what he's telling the guy that he's gonna kill him, but just in the most obtuse and roundabout sort of way.
It's like a Bond villain who actually has something to say.
Yeah, it's nice. Women got 20. He's the heavyweight champion of Sicilian lies. It says men got 17. Wait, what does he say? 17 something or other.
Yeah.
Women got 20. Men got 17.
It was weird to note, like, the whole time I was like, did they get a time machine from 2005 and think like, all right, who's the best well-known actors of our age in 2005?
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to 1993, find all those people with their dirt treat, then get like a cameo fest.
And the movie wasn't a hit at all, so it wasn't like this movie made their careers or anything. It's just like, oh yeah, we have Brad Pitt. We got,
that's,
you know,
right,
Brad Spliff
with
a Jamaican hat. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Dennis Hopper was probably the biggest name in the movie, right?
Yeah, probably
him and Christian Slater
right after his Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, he
came on with this.
King Koopa.
Samuel Jackson was in it.
Samuel was in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, which was, it really took me out of the movie.
Right.
Because I was like, as someone who will probably play a young version of Samuel Jackson
in the next biopic.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I guess the first one.
In the first one.
Is it biopic or biopic?
I say biopic and it bugs the crap out of me when people say biopic.
Yeah, me too. Because it's biopic.
Yeah.
Biography.
You're combining, yeah, exactly. You're combining two words. Why would you change the pronunciation?
That's what I say.
But I feel,
who else was in this movie?
I think it's funny that crazy, like, I don't think the movie works at all if...
Isn't James Gandolfini in it?
He is, yeah.
James, he was doing his best Ethan Suplee. He was just like this big mouth breathing. Yeah.
Oh, he's the best noise actor of this generation. Like, half of Gandolfini's acting is like nose noises and like weird breathing.
Yeah. And a weird smile.
Yeah.
Just like, Gabagool.
Gabagool! I don't know. I've only ever seen this
problem. I think Patricia Arquette is the linchpin of the entire movie, because she's just so fucking adorable in this movie. And it's like, her character on the page is kind of stupid. Like, she's clearly like 100% Tarantino's fantasy, where he's like, is this girl that wants to watch 9 hours of kung fu movies and then fuck you, and then just falls in love with you because of Spider-Man and thinks you're like the coolest guy ever.
But here's the thing,
and
she's the weird precursor to the bride, if you think about it,
to
the bride
interesting.
Of Kill Bill, because the whole time I was like, he's gonna come in and he's gonna kill James Gandolfini, and she literally like, she gets sucker punched, so she's already out of sorts. You think she's done for.
Right.
She fucking fights James Gunn. She takes a beating.
Yeah.
One, can I say, as a person that's played basketball,
your face is never going to look like what happens to your face. Yeah. Unless you're playing the bad boy Pistons.
Right.
You're not going to have...
unless you're going up against Isaiah Thomas.
I think that was the point where like her excuse is supposed to be the dumbest thing that nobody in their right mind would believe. But Dick Ritchie's like, oh yeah, playing basketball.
But I feel like the way that she... You know, pretty much she shot James Gandolfini in the fucking chest with a shotgun, which is like proof positive of that. Like, Clinton's always thought like he's always had a weird relationship with women in his movies, but they always end up like, yeah, that's pretty progressive to think that she beat the shit out of this like 300-pound man. Yeah.
And I think in the original script, she was the only one who lived. I think Clarence dies, and I think she takes off with the money. I think.
Hollywood ended it.
Raise his son. That would have been better. Like seeing your like bittersweet kind of thing.
I hope the you're so cool shit was in there, because that seems just like the. I feel like if you had to put your finger on like Quentin's psychology, it's like that's right there.
Yeah.
But she's like literally a hooker with a heart of gold.
Yeah,
and I think it only works because she's. Like, they caught her at the, she's like the perfect time where she had that, her cute little pebble teeth that she's just, I don't know. She was just so intensely cute in that movie.
Yeah. What did you think of, like, there's a lot of weird, I don't know. Like, you can tell for whatever reason you're supposed to think this is super cool. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole time I'm like, this isn't cool, but, they're working it real hard that this guy... They have ancillary characters that are saying the scene is cool.
Right.
They're
right,
supposed to be the audience surrogate. Like, no, this is supposed to be cool, you guys.
That's so true. Yeah. Where they're like, I love this kid. And you're like, okay, I guess he's... That's weird. Why would you love him? Because he threatened Bronson Pinchot with a gun.
We're all supposed to love him.
I guess
I'll love him, too.
That's so true.
I gotta go.
All right, you want to talk about Froggy Fresh?
I gotta go, otherwise I'm gonna be late.
All right.
But I'm going to listen to the Froggy Fresh on this podcast.
I guess we already did almost an hour and a half already. Yeah.
Well, I love you guys so much.
Love you too, buddy.
Yeah. And I wish you all the best. And I also wish Pat the best with his butthole.
Yeah. So, I'll wish his butthole well for you.
Oh, thank you.
On your behalf.
All right. Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I don't know. I think there's an element of he sort of has a backstory for characters that he doesn't necessarily take the time to explain, where he's just sort of like drops them in and like these guys have a relationship and you sort of get a feel for it, and it doesn't like which like what was I mean what were elements where you sort of sensed that there was more to him that didn't really make sense?
I think that the father character had a lot of unanswered questions.
Right.
And I feel the same thing about just the relationship with everybody in that hotel room before he like, you can't, there's no seeds of a double cross at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, it just comes out of nowhere, which I guess is a point.
Between Elliot and the producer?
No, between the drug dealer.
Oh.
Like, you never knew that guy was on a mission from another people. Like, the.
Oh, right. Drexel. Yeah. The whole. The Drexel scene. The scene where he.
Like, we don't eat pussy. Like,
yeah, that scene was weird. That scene's by far the weirdest one.
Yeah.
And it's like borderline embarrassing because it's like they're like, we don't eat pussy. Fuck you. It's like, if you do enough drugs, you do whatever. And you're like, what the fuck? What is that? What are they even talking about? And then he's like, all right, take this shotgun. The shotgun's a hot piece of ass, and you're you, and then he just shoots him, and you're like, what just happened? Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, because there's no reason that Drexel had to have had... Did Drexel steal... Drexel was working with the mob. Did he steal it from the mob, or whose drugs were they? Because the mob thought it was their coke.
Yeah, I think he was buying them. I think they referred it in like a very small... line. It was like, he's my courier, and then, like, he gets the cocaine.
Yeah.
But
why would he have had to like shoot somebody?
Well, I was very confused about that. And then I think the mafia
wasn't really explained well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they weren't explained well. Like, you get the context. And what the fuck were those guys who was working with the producer, like the gunmen of the producer?
Right, right.
Why were they
like, fuck you, I hate cops. And like,
I feel like
there some was, heavy weaponry for just the Hollywood producer guy.
Yeah, like there was supposed to be a scene where he gets like one, the last parking ticket they don't ever get. Yeah. He's just like, I fucking hate cops.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Boris guy. And I don't think Tarantino would have ever cast that big blonde guy.
Yeah.
But.
Well, that seems more like a, I feel like that's a, what's his name? Mr. Pink.
Yeah. What's the big guy? Oh, Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi. I feel like Steve Buscemi would have played that role. Because a lot of what makes Quentin Tarantino's writing good mm-hmm. is that he picks the person that would say it the best.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of what True Romance is like a different take on Tarantino. Yeah. Not like a necessarily bad or worse.
It's funny. Well, it's funny because I think in some ways there's definitely things, like I think the action scenes would have looked a lot better as Tarantino action scenes. I think Tony Scott, the way he shoots it, it's like there's a lot of just like people's like close-ups on people. Yeah. And then the whole scene in Drexel's drug den.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weirdly blocked and you can't quite tell what's going on, where I feel like if it was Tarantino, it'd be very specifically choreographed.
Yeah.
But then Tarantino also said that when he was thinking about casting it, he thought of Clarence Worthy as Robert Carradine and Alabama as Joan Cusack, which like doesn't work at all. Like maybe I don't think Christian Slater had to play that character, but yeah. I definitely think that if Patricia Arquette wasn't Alabama, that it would be a completely different movie.
Yeah. Well, then it would be a more believable. I feel like a large part of what makes this great movie even better is that it's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Like it's a legit save the princess fairy mm-hmm. tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's gangsters, there's a hooker with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like even if it was a bit, I don't know. Because Patricia Arquette, at least, it's not that she can't lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that any other circumstance in the story would sound disingenuous out of anybody else. Because you feel you really...
Which...
She's just like, I'm telling you the truth, fucker.
Mm-hmm. Like, she's just so bubbly. And
yeah.
Like,
so earnest.
Yeah, she's like, she's innocent where she seems like she's never seen like a kung fu movie before. Like, she's sort of just this blank slate that Quentin Tarantino gets... Like, he imagines himself experiencing the world for the first time, like as a hot chick, basically. Where she's like, I like all this stuff too. I love you.
What brought you originally to this movie? Because I had never seen this before.
I think I got into movies in like junior high when I saw Pulp Fiction. I think Pulp Fiction was the first Tarantino movie I saw, mm-hmm. and I really liked it. And then I used to hang out at Tower Records like all the time.
Yeah.
Before that closed down, and I bought a book that was the scripts for Reservoir Dogs and True Romance.
Yeah.
And so True Romance was weird because it was one of the probably the first movie where I ever read the script as like a script and then saw the movie.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, like you definitely look at it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird thing. Like I look at it the same way I look at The Rum Diary by Hunter Thompson, where it's sort of this thing that someone that you've become familiar with it's something that they do early in their career where it feels like a rough draft, and it's sort of like,
yeah.
I don't think it's their best work by any means, but it's like this weird, you feel like you know them better, like you get the version of them that's like unsoftened by craft, kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just like raw.
And I think in both stories, it's like the writer, like I definitely think that True Romance it's Quentin Tarantino who wrote it before he knew what his writing voice was, and he was sort of drifting, you know, he hadn't quite found his direction in life yet, and he sort of wrote this version of him as like his idealized version of himself. You know what I mean? So,
which is a weird way of making your own gold.
Yeah.
Cause like,
it totally is. It's like, and it totally worked out for him.
Yeah. Cause there's, I've seen a couple of articles and I've seen a couple of like Quentin Tarantino knockoffs, but he loves what he loves so much that you can tell. Of course, there's going to be a bunch of like Sonny Chiba references.
Yeah.
For no reason. Like, it adds nothing to the character, but they have to add it. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's going to be like just a scene where they're doing illegal shit, but they're not talking about illegal shit. So I kind of, I appreciate it after seeing everything that Quentin Tarantino did.
Yeah.
But I probably would have loved it more just to see like this kind of punk rock version of,
I don't know,
what he was going for.
I always wonder if I would have, like, I kind of wonder if I would have just been confused by it the first time I saw it, because it's like, I mean, it's a fucking weird, weird movie. Like the scene where Elvis, the ghost of Elvis, is telling him he should go shoot a pimp in the face.
Well, have you ever read Preacher?
No.
Preacher, it's pretty. I don't know which came first, this or Preacher. I've only read like the first three, and I just couldn't keep reading it because it's hard to like. It's hard to be cool on in like graphic novel form. It's hard to be like, oh man, it's so edgy when I'm like, I pay my own bills. This guy's an asshole.
Yeah,
it's because it's so transparent. The trying to find that cool makes me. It alienates me.
Right.
Because I have no one to root for. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought I was going to root for Dennis Hopper, and then he just started calling people niggers.
Yeah.
Same thing with Clarence. It's just like, oh, he's like this white knight, but now he's doing, like, he's selling cocaine. Like, that's cool. So, it's pretty interesting in that it's a road trip movie and a heist movie and, like, a Pretty Woman kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just like there's a lot of, he just like, it's almost like he took four different scripts and then he sewed them all together.
Right. Yeah. It's very, yeah. It's the tone thing is like, you wonder what people were thinking when they read it.
Yeah.
Or they're like, what the hell kind of movie is this?
But I could see how it like could be someone's favorite fucking movie.
Because it's just got such weirdness to it.
Yeah.
Like, I think things end up becoming more mythologized when you can't quite like explain it, where you're like, why the hell did that, like the Elvis telling him to shoot somebody in the face thing, just like, that's the
are you an Elvis fan?
I guess, I mean, somewhat. Yeah, I don't know,
was that like a thing that people were going through? I feel like the 90s was a good time for the 60s.
Oh yeah, well, I think that was you know, that was like right around probably the swinger
shit, so yeah, probably you're right. Like
the Rockabilly came back and swing kind of came back all around the same time, you know?
That used to be so confusing as a child watching MTV.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I didn't know that they were amping something old, but it didn't feel new.
Right.
Like, you can't go from Public Enemy
to fucking to Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Exactly. Yeah. It's in that way, I think that's what dates the 90s, is them stealing the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
But there's...
Yeah, with like Clarence's like weird bowling shirts and stuff,
weird
too.
Weird bowling shirt, and they're always wearing Elvis glasses. And they're always... It almost felt like this was a movie that was like commissioned by the Graceland estate.
Yeah. Just like, Elvis, just all the Elvis. Well, I think that's definitely a Tarantino thing. I think there's a line in either Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction where they're arguing about whether you're either a Beatles person or an Elvis person.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of his worldview. Like, he's an Elvis guy and he doesn't like the Beatles.
I love that hillbilly.
Yeah,
that's a good question that was brought up in the beginning of the movie. If you had to fuck a dude, who would you fuck?
Oh, Tom Hardy.
Really?
I mean, come
on. Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
How big is his dick?
That's a good question. Would you want a guy with a big dick, or do you want him to be feminine, or do you want him to be like a handsome man? That's a good question. I mean, because if I'm looking for like a guy who just sort of looks like a girl, I think Jared Leto, like in a wig, would probably be like, I mean, he's probably prettier than half the girls I've dated, so.
That that'd be a weird way to introduce your girlfriend. Yeah. Or just like, oh man, I met this girl. She looks like Jared Leto.
She looks like Jared Leto in a wig, but with tits. She's so hot. Yeah.
I just want to get 30 seconds to Mars with this girl that looks like Jared Leto.
I want to get 30 seconds to Mars. Oh, that works so well. I love that.
I don't know. If I had to fuck a dude, it'd probably be it'd probably be somebody like Leon. Remember the one word, the mononym Leon, who was like in Above the Rim in the Madonna Like a Player, Prayer video.
Oh, okay.
Just like this, angular, he could have been a king.
He sort of looks like a male version of what's her face from Red Sonja, the tall, forget her name.
What, anyway. Grace Jones?
Yeah, Grace Jones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like the closer I can get to the power and majesty of Grace Jones, I'm just looking, fair. In a fella, I'm looking for a strong woman.
Okay, I see that, yeah.
When is White Boy Day? That's another question.
I think it is May 24th. I don't know. It was funny. They had that guy, Paul Bates, the big fat guy who plays Marty in the movie, and who also is one of the bodyguards in Coming to America, which I forgot about.
Yeah.
And he was there, and they're like, oh, dude, say it's not White Boy Day. And people were like filming him, and he's like, nah. It ain't White Boy Day. He did the line like six times, but he committed to it every time. He's like, yeah, I don't care. I'll do it.
But the funny thing is, there's like, yeah, there has to be a White Boy Day. There has to be.
Yeah. That would be
like the day if somebody planned Super it. Smash Bros. Came out or something. Mm-hmm.
Smash Mouth.
Yeah, Smash Mouth. Just Smash Mouth on Smash
playing
Bros.
Playing on a loop. There's like Guy Fieri's just driving around and driving around in his car. Like, what would be the festivities for White Boy Day? Just Eve 6 headlining, fucking this brunch, all day brunch.
All day brunch, a lot of Ultimate.
Yeah. Hacky Sacks. Hacky Sacks and Ultimate all day.
Because if it was on, because that's a very positive white person holiday, you know, it's not like some religious holiday where somebody got murked in the middle of town square and we're like, all right, we better celebrate this fucking guy because he got shanked.
Yeah.
It's always, I feel like that could be a reason to have a Monday off. Just like White Boy Day.
But not like any prominent people, just like sort of like gay pride, but just like celebrating whiteness.
Yeah.
Just for no reason.
Yeah. But no white not boyness.
Like, but not any of like the heroic aspects. Yeah. Just sort of the aspects that everybody takes for granted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like there's no one gains from Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a side of white that I could get behind.
The side of just drinking and
just drinking and being a cool dude.
Yeah. Well, does anybody care what Cinco de Mayo is about?
No.
It's a great.
Technically, it's White Boy Day.
Yeah, it could be. Might be. Yeah. You go down to Nick's Crispy Tacos. It's pretty much White Boy Day every Taco Tuesday.
White Boy Day every day.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're almost we're coming up on an hour 45. Any last thoughts on True Romance?
I have some starred, because I wrote like a full page of shit.
Yeah, I'm curious the Virgin's perspective for sure. I think I saw it like four times this weekend. So
I wrote Michael Rapaport in the final scene is Odd Future. It's just like fucking funky ass dress shirts and weird hats and shorts. Like he could have been in that band. I did not appreciate the lack of vomit continuity on the sweater.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that was a huge part of what made that character pop. I feel like they too much care on the vomit, and then not enough on keeping it on screen. And then idioms. This movie is pretty much wall-to-wall sayings and phrases.
Well, I think that Quentin Tarantino's idea is just that he has like a series of sayings that he has chambered at any given time that he can just bust out. Like, am I a blonde with big tits, his ass with an ass that tastes like vanilla ice cream? Like, I guarantee.
Which was perfected in Pulp Fiction.
Right.
I feel like Pulp Fiction was a second draft of True Romance.
That's what I'm saying. It's like rough draft. The whole thing is like, same thing with the suitcase. Like, there's the suitcase full of coke, and then in Pulp Fiction, it's like,
the gunman that ultimately ended up in The Wire, he was also in that scene. He was like the liaison to the Greek in The Wire. That's the only reason.
Right. Yeah. The guy with
Who sees a briefcase fly in the air and think, all right, ski. Time to do some ski shit right now.
Shoot that thing.
Pool.
Also, there was the whole, like, the Mexican standoff scene, and they're all pointing the guns at each other ready to shoot, and no one shoots until the producer throws coffee in the guy's face. Like, why would that be the moment that you decide to shoot? And he doesn't shoot anyone with a gun. He shoots, like, the fat Jewish movie producer who has a coffee pot in his hand. They're like, oh, yeah, fucking shoot him. Can't throw coffee in a guy's face like that. Bullshit.
It's white boy day. We're not going for that shit.
White boy day. This is not what white boy day is about, fellas. Come on. Settle down.
But did he just read Hamlet for the first time? Or that, like, it became part of the culture zeitgeist? Because so many characters, like, something's rotten in the state of Denmark. I think he was trying to start. It's almost like your friend that starts, like, saying the same thing over and over so that it'll catch on with your group of friends. Just like, yo, Denmark is fucked up right now.
Also, like, I think I used this today where it was like, oh, we park our cars in the same garage. Okay.
Yeah. All right, play it. But no, True Romance. I would never have watched it without doing this show. So thank you for.
No, sure. I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Oh, it was a weird one. It's a weird one.
Super
and
weird.
You went to a whole festival. Have you talked about it on any other podcast?
I'm writing up a retrospective about.
Be real. Do you think it's gonna like continue? Do you think there's gonna be
the festival?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it was fun, and I think they, you know, it seemed like they made their money back.
Yeah,
like
they had.
I don't know that I would go for a whole weekend again.
Yeah,
but just going for the night where they show the movie and have a Q&A.
Yeah,
and the people are walking around, and there's like lots of props. And
is
stuff.
Anybody big that was a part of the movie?
Christian Slater's dad. Who I don't think talks to Christian Slater that much anymore. It's just such a random collection. But to me, like, that's so much cooler than having Christian Slater there, to be honest. Like, that's way more interesting to me than that Christian Slater's dad's there. I love that Christian Slater's dad's there. And then, so, you know when Alabama's getting beat up in the hotel room and Clarence is buying a hamburger at the same time?
Yeah.
The guy who sold him the hamburger, that actor was there. Saeed. And he was hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Marty,
Saeed,
the assistant director, Bronson Pinchot, Christian Slater's dad. Like, to me, like, that's so much more interesting because those people, you can ask them questions and they have like a weird life. Like, they don't, I'm sure, like, what kind of stories is Christian Slater going to tell you? Like, he's been, Jesus Christ.
It's like the Dunbar's number where you, like, you can only remember so many films you've been in.
Yeah.
Those people remember that one film that they were in for the rest of their lives.
And I think that guy Saeed was like working at Carl's Jr. when he got discovered, or he method. got fired from Carl's Jr. for going to the audition or something like that. So
well, they're always hiring at Burger King.
I mean, that's a more interesting story to me though. So
because then that means like there was some stakes.
Yeah,
like there's some literal stakes and some figurative stakes
exactly
to that role. No, it's a good time. It's fun. It's minutia. It's a very pulpy without being pulp.
Yeah.
Fiction.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're gonna put it to bed. Anything that you would like to plug?
I want to do this so many more times. And for the whole time. I don't know Vince too well. But I always respected what you do and what you've done. And the whole time I was just like, he hates me.
Really?
He's never put me on podcast. No,
it's only one a week. So it's like, I want to have people on and then I'll like forget or like, you know.
But no, just Sylvan Productions, I guess.
Yeah. Sylvan Productions. You have what's the website?
Sylvanproductions.com.
Sylvanproductions.com. That's Sylvan. Is that like the tree?
It's like the learning center.
Okay.
or, you know, it could be.
What's your Twitter?
At OJ Patterson.
At OJ Patterson. All right. Well, definitely. Any guest who actually like takes the time to see the movie that we're talking about is definitely someone that I want to invite back. So count on it.
Yes.
Yeah. Woo! All right. Thanks, guys. Good night and good chins.